It seems that in today's world, we've had to grow up so quickly. And the young children that we once were, who were joyful, playful, silly, and spontaneous, all of a sudden transformed into adults who needed to be serious, self-sacrificing, and forever living the hamster wheel lifestyle. Well, today my guest explains how getting in touch with your inner child can actually unlock a reinvention, an awakening, if you will, where you can remember who you once were in order to become who you want to be. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. And get ready for all of the new programming coming out of Empowered Educator. Head on over to empowerededucator.com/workshops to get the professional development that you've been waiting for. I know that you want to be an educator that lives with more peace and ease and calm, but you might never have believed it was possible for you. Empowered Educator Workshops will show you the way, because here you will get concrete strategies you need to live the life you want. Grab your seat at the next Empowered Educator Workshop by going to empowerededucator.com/workshops. Remember all the passion and vision you had when you first went into teaching? Feeling like building young minds and creating community through your work would make a lasting impact on this world? Well, those days may feel like they're behind you now because you're exhausted, stressed, and overwhelmed and frustrated, but I'm here to tell you it doesn't have to be like this. In fact, the love of teaching never really went away, but it absolutely needs transformation. Welcome to the Take Notes Podcast. I'm Jen Rafferty, former music teacher, mom of two, and certified emotional intelligence practitioner, and I'm here to light the way for you. In order to create a generational change for our kids, we need to shift the paradigm away from the perpetual stress and overwhelm and into a life of joy and fulfillment. This is Education 2.0, where you become the priority, shift how you live your life, and how you show up both at work and at home. So take a sip of steamy morning coffee and grab your notebook. It's time to take notes. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Take Notes Podcast. I am so excited to introduce to you my guest today, who is also a dear friend. This is Liz Svatek, and she is the CEO of Warrior Women, Inc., founded upon women unleashing their inner warrior and becoming the most powerful versions of themselves. She is the creator of the Warrior Woman Experience, a transformational live event bringing women together across the country. And she is the host of the Conversations with Warrior Women podcast, which is globally ranked in the top 1.5%, which yours truly has been a guest on our podcast before. Liz travels all over the world speaking, healing, and empowering women to live their limitless possibility, reclaim their power, and heal their little girls. Hi, Liz. Thank you so much for being here.
I mean, I just love you. I could just stare at your face because I just love to see you podcasting. I've had you on my podcast, but this is really fun to be on yours.
Thank you. Yeah, it is fun for me. You know, really, it's just an excuse to have some awesome public conversations with people I adore.
100%.
Right?
And to bring anyone on that you're fascinated by and you're like, I want to talk to you, sister. Come on here. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That's what this is. So you talk in your bio about healing little girls. We're just going to dive in. Like, what is that? Talk to us about what that means, why it's important, and what's on the other side of it.
Yes. I mean, back in the day, we called this inner child work. This is not new. These are not new things. But I think the way I want to address it and the way I am addressing it is a little bit different. I think it through inner child work in the past, there was a lot of deep exploration and that was considered to be very woo, you know, like you were doing inner child work, you know, like a woo person, you're living on a mountaintop, being with your inner child. I think your inner child, I call it your little girl because I work with women. I think your little girl is incredibly accessible. I think this is something that is a daily, hourly, minute by minute practice where we identify and access our little girl inside. And we look to her for the wisdom, the guidance, the love, the meeting of our unmet needs. We look to her for everything. I think she is the key. And when I do this work with women, it can be very, not only transformative, but upsetting when we first begin. Because a lot of us have locked away our little girls. Because guess what? In order to be in the big world and compete with men and compete in the patriarchy, we had to like shut these little girls down. Oh, no, you can't be emotional. You can't be too playful. You can't be too joyful. You got to stay in your lane and you got to play like a man so that you can survive. And I think when we realize how long these little girls have been locked up and that these little girls actually can come into our business, into our lives, we can have our little girls play with our children. I mean, my God, all the ways we can play. I think it's upsetting in the beginning because we realize how neglected they've been.
Sure. Well, we live in a world where we have to grow up very quickly. And you're right. I remember being told myself, it was too much. It was too big. I was too loud. I was too shiny. I was too sparkly. You know, simmer down, slow down, lay down, sit down, like all of this. I think there's actually a Seinfeld bit about this too, right? And, you know, there's a piece of this too about not just growing up quickly and having to kind of shove all of that down, but I was also taught and told to be a good girl. And that shifted a whole lot about what I thought it meant to be a woman, a person in this space. And I'm sure you come across this a lot. I'm sure you've even experienced this yourself. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that has had some very serious implications on my life up until relatively recently when I started doing my own work about this too.
Well, I mean, a good girl is very limiting. Let's start there. I mean, if you're a good girl, you get married to a man, you have children, you don't talk about sex. Maybe you don't work, or maybe you work, but you only work certain hours because you got to take care of the kids too. I mean, it's such a limiting, and then the politeness, the manners, the having to take care of everybody else's feelings. I mean, this has led to an epidemic of burnout and craziness and women who feel like they're just on the hamster wheel of stress and pressure. And that looks like being a good girl, not complaining. This is where that dark side of resilience comes in, which we're going to talk about. But this is where we become so isolated, being the good girl, not admitting that we're on the verge of collapse because we are supposed to hold everything for everyone and hold everybody's hopes and dreams and be the good girl. And it is exhausting to be the good girl. Exhausting. So when women are meeting with me, they simultaneously want to keep the good girl image because that's kind of become an identity. And like, I kind of still want to be a good girl, but it's in the releasing of that, that suddenly you're like, oh, I don't have to do it this way that I've been programmed since I was 5 years old. I can actually tell somebody no. And that's a full and complete sentence. How wonderful for me.
Right. And that is where the transformation lies, because what happens is we get all of these ideas from other people about even what the word good means. And so we live and operate within a box as if there's a, I know you can't see me because I am on audio right now, but I'm like making this box shape around my head. And that's just kind of how we see the world, is through this box. And once, yeah, we'll do a little Vogue. Yeah, I think that's more appropriate.
No, it's just my Vogue. My Vogue hands. I couldn't help myself. I did.
Yeah, a Vogue box. I like that much better. But that is where the limitations come from. And we walk around with these blinders on in all directions. And we can't actually see outside of ourselves until we have somebody else to kind of show us how we can start to remove some of these things, which I think also underscores the importance of having somebody on the outside, like a coach, for example, or a therapist, to hold up a mirror, right?
I mean, yeah, I'm sorry, but I can't read the wine label from inside the bottle.
That's it.
I need you, Jen, to say, hey, Liz, have you ever thought about this? Have you ever thought about that this might be an old identity and something that's actually limiting you? Have you ever considered that? I need somebody to ask me questions. I mean, this is what's so funny. Like, who asks us these things? We're not sitting around drinking our wine with our girlfriends having these talks. Well, unless they're you and me, because we're coaches and that's what we do. But, you know, like regular people are not having these types of conversations. And if you do, it's like, it's like, did Liz just say that? You know, but this is the kind of work that coaches do, right? Like coaches really kind of ask these important questions that lead you to be your own guru and get to your own solutions.
Right. And it's so interesting. We don't talk about it when we're with our girlfriends because that in and of itself is taboo, which means we're not being good anymore.
Boom.
That's it.
Right there. Bad thing right there.
Yeah. And then the cycle continues, which I also have to mention here again, just to make this super explicit, this is why I work with teachers, because the teacher workforce.
What is a more good girl job than a teacher?
Right. It's mostly women.
What is a better good girl job? than a teacher. So you could just carry your good girl right into caring for students and sacrifice the shit out of yourself, Jen, so that you have nothing left.
That's it. And that's the message that our students receive. And really, that's what this is. While we're talking about adults, this is actually really about the kids who are growing up with these examples of what it means to be an adult in this world. And the examples that they're getting are not sustainable because, let's face it, many of us who are living this hamster wheel lifestyle, we're not happy. And we all deserve more than that. You know, you kind of figured this out on your own path. Can you share a little bit about your story and how you came to this reckoning moment in your life when you realized, I thought I had it all, but actually, second thought, I feel like there's this thing that's not quite complete here.
Yes. You know, it's not a midlife crisis. It's usually a cry for reinvention. I've had reinventions at 20, at 30, at 40. But I think the one, the reinvention and the kind of what I thought was a midlife crisis at 49 was my biggest one, because that was the one I said, well, shit, all the things I've been chasing, I already have. Now what? I have it. I have a husband. I have kids. I have a nice car. I have a nice house. I have nice clothes. I just knew that there was more. And in this all this chase that I've been doing, I wasn't happy while I was getting all those things. So I was like, well, I'm not happy. And I feel like there's more, but I'm terrified because I don't know what the more is. Like, I've already chased all these external things. So I know all that's not it. So it was actually quite terrifying to realize that the more was actually something internal. It was something inside. It was something, a feeling I had inside that I was going to have to let go of an old identity that was the perfect wife and mother and house and all these things and say, okay, I'm just going to put everything up for discussion and see what I really want to do. Where do I really want to be? What does my life really want to look like so that I can really enjoy myself? And that started with a podcast that led to me becoming a coach, all the things that I was terrified to do, frankly, and didn't even know if I wanted to do them, that I just ended up embracing once I started accessing this little girl, doing this work of my little girl, asking my little girl, what do you need right now? What would be really fun? How can I bring you along? Because ultimately, we have all left our little girls behind. We had to for survival. We had to. We couldn't survive in the world, in this big, bad world, with bringing the little girl. But bringing her with me now, the choices become clearer. You know, even the way I parent becomes different because now I see it through her lens, right? Like, I have a more compassionate lens because I'm looking at it like, how must that feel to her? How did that feel when she was 16? When she was 14, right? It helps me tremendously. So that reinvention was the beginning of everything.
And I love that reinvention because that's actually a common theme that people talk about on this podcast. No, it doesn't matter what the macro topic we're talking about, reinvention always seems to pop up in one way or another. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we're able to give each other permission to give themselves permission to rewrite your story. That reinvention is one of the most beautiful gifts you can give to yourself. But with that being said, and I'm speaking from my experience, and I'd love to hear your experience, it's messy. It is painful. It is not always pleasant, to say the least. So there's a lot of big, ugly sobbing and snot bubbles that happen. And, you know, that was for me. And I would love to hear some of that mess, which is where the growth and the shift happens.
Yes. I mean, shift happens right there. I think we're afraid of the mess. We're afraid of the darkness, right? But some of this is a rebirth. And what is a rebirth? You're in the womb. It's dark. You can't see shit. You're planting seeds. You can't see the plant. You don't put a seed in the ground and say, oh, here's the flower, right? There's a certain amount of a leap of faith where we don't even know what is going to happen. And we're just kind of, especially when we're shedding one identity and we're moving into another, we don't necessarily know what that other one is. We don't really have a road map. And I think that's what stops people. They're like, oh, but it's not all lined out. I don't know what it is. It's like, no, 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 that's part of it. Part of this is, I know I'm not bad anymore. I know that's not working. And so I'm just going to turn myself in this direction and I'm going to let some things go and I'm going to let some things happen. And I'm also going to fall on my face and snot bubble and cry and feel it and just kind of let myself go there because we don't know what it is. We are leaping without a net, but really the universe is our safety net. So we're really not, but it feels that way. It feels really scary and very dark.
It does. And there's two things I want to just hit on right there. You can't possibly know what comes next because it's new. That's the whole thing. You know, we want to predict because that is how our brains keep us safe. There's scripts that are involved that our brain writes for us. So we know if we follow the script, then this will happen, then this will happen. And if you're walking into an unknown identity, there is no script. There are quite literal blank pages. And I also want to just touch on what you said about the universe as your safety net, because that phrase in of itself is sometimes difficult for people to understand and really hear. And for me, this is how I explain it. I would love to hear how you explain it too. It's even if you were to just stay still for a second and feel the gravitational pull pulling you down into the earth from your feet all the way up to your head. So you have this ability to stand upright on this spinning earth in this great big universal space that we have. That in and of itself is support. And you are not dead. You are very much alive. And I heard that from somebody on some sort of trauma conference I had gone to. And I thought it was a beautiful analogy of what really the universe has your back, or the universe is your safety net. What that actually means is that you're never lost. You're never gone. You're always actually supported. And I would love to hear, how do you explain that for people who are not sure about what that means?
I say your soul is on a vacation. Your soul chose to be here. And we are labeling it good or bad, right? But your soul doesn't do that. Your soul's like, I'm here with Jen. Jen is the coolest. I love her. But this is actually cool for me. Like, I get to experience this. Like, our souls are not in a place of judgment. Our souls aren't over here going, this is really terrible. Our souls are like, this wild ride of this woman's life, this is the greatest thing in the world. And so when I think of my soul on a vacation, I think my soul knows what it's doing. It knew what we were going to do when it got here. It chose me for a reason. So there's a direction I'm going in that I can't possibly know. And control is an illusion anyway. We have no control over anything. Like when you say you're a control freak, you're hilarious. You really can't control a damn thing. So I just think that universe having my safety net is just knowing my soul is on this wild ride that it chose with me. And that there, as long as I'm not over here judging what's good and bad, as long as I'm saying to myself, what is the universal truth? What does the universe want for me? Kind of like tapping into that higher level of thinking, then all these things that I consider bad or not great, or when I feel like I'm by myself, I know that's really not the case. Really what the case is that my soul is having a rip-roaring good time and it's on a vacation.
Yeah, and all of the ups and downs of when life gets super lifey, right? So there's this element of, and this is also something that I like because the neuroscientists talk about this too, of having your soul in your meat suit. You know, that comes from a lot of the neuroscience there. I mean, those layman's terms, actually, in some of the workshops I've been to, which is cool because it takes it out of that woo space for me and puts it also in academia. And it can live in both, right? We are these energetic spiritual beings in this human body and navigating through that. And like you said, and I love that of releasing the judgment of good or bad, but alignment of what feels the most on the path. And if you get quiet enough, you can feel that.
And the little girl knows.
Yes. So there's this both, right?
This is the best too. This is the best too. How many times have you been you have a project, you got a shit ton of stuff to do, and you're like, this little voice says, I want to go outside. And you're like, no, we have to finish this. We only have until 5. And then we have to go get the kids. And you got to make dinner. But the little voice says, but I really want to just go outside. Just can I go outside for like 5 minutes? That's your little girl. So like when you're paying attention to that, then your whole world is a different world, right? Like, what if the little girl's like, I don't want to make dinner tonight. I want to just order out. Like, I mean, honestly, there's a little wisdom in there that we deny constantly that is our connection and our alignment.
100%. And it's so funny you just brought up dinner because...
Because you don't want to cook dinner tonight?
Oh, you know what? I used to love cooking dinner. And then I got to a certain point in my life where I was like, you know, I just don't like doing this anymore. And I started listening to her and that little voice. And I don't often do it anymore. I mean, my kids still eat. I still eat, but I'm not spending an hour and 15 minutes in the kitchen anymore. And then dinner takes what? 7 minutes for everyone to eat and then maybe an extra three to talk about our day. And then I'm standing there doing a bunch of dishes. No, thank you. And so the way that I even operate dinner has changed because I am now listening more to that voice because I got quiet enough to hear it. So can you actually talk a little bit about that? Because we cannot hear that intuition of our little girl, as you call it, and her, if we are so busy in our mind body. How do we get quiet?
Well, first of all, we're addicted to busy, right? Because that stillness is really scary sometimes. If you have not spent, and I only say this because I lived it, I was scared of stillness. I was like, what's going to happen when I stop talking and moving? Because then I'm going to feel all these feelings, Jen. And I was not really available for that. I was like, I don't need to feel all these things. I want to just keep going and keep drinking the wine and just let it all go, right? And you have to start small because it's very intimidating. When people are like, go meditate. When people used to tell me that, Jen, I'd be like, you know what? Go shove it. Like, I hate you. For people who are type A and busy like I was, you have to start so small. Like, you can start with meditation that you just open your eyes. You're like, oh, I'm awake. Okay, let me close my eyes again and just like go internal for 2 minutes. Or let me go outside for 3 minutes and just look at the trees for just 3 minutes. Like, that's just the beginning of trying to just get that stillness. Because once you get a load of that, it starts to feel like a vacation. You start to feel like you've gone to Hawaii. Like, 5 minutes of meditation feels like a trip to Kauai, if you can get that into your body. But when you first do it, it's terrifying because a lot of thoughts are going to come to your head. Thoughts like this. I don't know if I like what I'm doing anymore. I don't know if I like this guy anymore. I'm really not feeling like a good mother lately. I feel like my kids are spoiled. Some things are going to come to your brain that you don't like. And I think rather than resisting those things, and then they become huge and like a billboard on the highway and they're scary, if you can lock into that stillness a little bit, if you can let that in a little bit and start to just let those thoughts come, let those tears come, right? Take the air out of the tire, release that pressure a little bit in the beginning, you're going to feel so much better. And part of that whole emotional releasing thing, which I think terrifies people, is that they don't understand that if you don't let the tears come, you can't feel the joy. Like, for years, I was like, I just want to feel the joy. I'm going to cherry pick this. I don't want the sad stuff. I just want the good stuff. So I would just be like focused on that. And I would not let myself cry over anything. Now that I let myself cry, if I want to snap at all, if I want to throw a tantrum on the ground, let my little girl freak out, rage, whatever it is, my capacity for joy, my love capacity is so much bigger because I've carved out a space that when those tears fall out, the joy comes in.
So beautiful. And it's so true. There needs to be first safety around that, which you kind of touched on, to make it safe for stillness and safe for the release, and a value shift of, I value my emotional well-being more than the dishes, the dinner, the getting kids to soccer practice on time. Because when you do those things, you will meet them with more joy because your capacity is then bigger. And my question to you is, how do we start to shift our values to really honor stillness and honor emotional release?
Well, part of this is that dark side of resilience thing.
So let's talk about that.
So this whole definition of resilience has been used against us. And I don't think women are really aware of this, because there's really, to me, no difference between the 1950s housewife and this resilient thing. It's a box. It's just another box they're putting us into. Because when we're resilient, quote unquote, we're not asking for help. We're not feeling emotion. We're so resilient, we're just pushing through. So part of this is a huge paradigm shift of realizing that when you are feeling emotion and releasing emotion, that is really true resilience. That is letting yourself heal and feel and letting things move through you and being able to actually handle whatever's coming for you, because you realize like, oh, I handled that. Like, I'm capable. This is okay. Like, I survived that. I'm okay, you know? But this whole resilience is like holding our breath and not letting us feel, not letting us have. And it's judgment, right? It's the perfection of the June cleaver and the making the dinners with the apron on and this resilient, this blonde girl that works out. She's ripped. She works out. She's got her kids. She's got a successful job. I mean, my God, it's just the new version. It's our like 2000s version of our June cleaver. And I think when we drop that, and just say what is really true is I'm an emotional being and I need to have emotions, energy in motion. I need to let that out. There's a judgment around that. And that's back to the little girl too, is that little girls, they feel things. They don't care about how things look. They care about how things feel. And we need to get back to that.
Yeah, I've shared this story before. I don't think I've shared it on the podcast before. You know, my daughter, who's almost 9, but, you know, when she was 6, 7 and a little into 8, the whole neighborhood knew when she was pissed off. Everybody knew. But you get to a certain age where feelings like rage, like anger, like profound sadness and frustration still occur, but it is no longer appropriate for you to have that temper tantrum where everybody knows how you're feeling. And we are not explicitly taught how to handle our emotions in a way that's productive and safe and healthy. And that's really what we're talking about here is when we value our emotional release, what we're actually saying is we value ourselves and in our humanity. This is part of what it means to be human. And because we haven't explicitly been taught the way to move about this, no wonder why we have no clue how to do it. No wonder why it feels so scary. So all of those things, as if you're listening and this is resonating with you, it makes complete sense. And there's nothing wrong with you. And if it's not serving you, here's another way.
Yeah. And let me say, we've all been wounded by past. Like, I mean, our parents did the best they could. We do not blame the parents. I do not blame the parents. But our parents had some limitations. And a lot of times our little girls were flooded with all this emotion, didn't know what to do with it then because they didn't have a place to put it. They had a disempowered parent or a falsely empowered parent, and they have all this emotion. They don't know what to do with it. And then we grow up to be these adults that are still not really knowing what to do with our emotions and mimicking our disempowered parents, and then bringing that down to our kids, like that it isn't cool to release your emotion and be ragey. It's not cool to cry and all this stuff. And that's what they were told us. And then we were like, okay, that seems to be what it is. Like, that's how it goes. Only now are we waking up to the fact that, my God, if that kid is having a tantrum in the mall, I'm not blaming you, Jen. You know what I'm saying? Wow, that kid's having an emotional release. I celebrate this child right now. I always make jokes with that. When I see somebody in the airport and their kids losing their shit, this just happened on the way back from Orlando. I said, I love how powerful she is and that she is just releasing this right now. And the parents looked at me like, oh, it's crazy. But I said, this is so amazing. Like, I was just like giving them that reframe because really that's what it is. They're releasing. And you know what? It's okay.
It is okay. And even as you're saying that, I'm feeling some things actually in my body, because part of this too, whether you're a parent or a teacher, we wrap so much of our self-concept and our self-worth in what our children or students are doing. And they are children. They are children, and they are figuring it out on their own, and they don't live in the same limitations that we have learned and believed about ourselves. And to your point, and this is kind of how we started this whole interview, is when we connect back to that inner child, we start to have that empathy for what's happening and open the doors for more understanding and acceptance, instead of all of this gross judgment that we throw at ourselves and other people. Because let's be honest, where has that gotten us?
Oh, no, zero places. And the shame, it's like the shame funnel, you know, it just came from the parents, the great grandparents. The shame funnel just like keeps going down, down, down. And I have definitely shamed my daughter. I have shamed my daughter for having really intense emotions. And then I thought, my God, like, this is just uncomfortable for me. I'm not used to holding space for another person's emotions because no one held space for mine. So this is just a new thing I'm learning, right? I'm learning how to hold space for my own emotions. I'm learning how to hold space for teenage emotions. Like, we're all in this learning curve. The worst thing we can do is shame the shit out of ourselves and say, oh my God, I'm doing it wrong, blah, blah, blah. It's more about the awareness of that these emotions, like you said, are part of the human experience. And that when you don't do that, when you don't let that out, right? We've seen what's happening in the world. These people with their pent up emotions and the actions that they're taking. So that's the actual other side of it. So which would you rather have, right? The people who are safely releasing emotion, working through some things, or the people who are absolutely have that rage as a constant undercurrent and are out there acting it out all over the place, including students in school?
100%. That's really it. And what I think is so important as you go through this journey of awareness and different realizations about yourself and this path to just more alignment is that it has to happen within community, because within that community, so much of that shame dissipates because you become a part of this place where other humans are literally expressing the same things that you are feeling. And it is no longer about you. You are not special. This is the human experience. We all experience this, which I think also creates this oneness about one human being to another human being living this human experience. You know, I mean, Liz, and for those of you who don't know, which most of you don't, Liz and I met through some of these circles where we got our coaching ourselves and started exploring this together. And we spill our guts out. I don't know what your day-to-day life is, but I know some of your innermost, deepest emotions that you've poured out, and vice versa, because we have created this safety within community. And whatever you do, whatever path you go on for your own healing, I do encourage anyone who's listening to do it within community. That is essential in this process.
Oh, that's the whole basis of my business and your business too, Jen. I mean, I don't feel that women can heal the same. You didn't get hurt by yourself. You weren't by yourself and you were hurt. A lot of the ways we're hurt are from other people. So when you heal with other people, it's even more powerful, because the first thing you want to do is when you're in a miserable place, isolate, lock yourself in your house. I'm the worst mother, teacher, whoever I am. I'm the worst person alive, right? Like no one has experienced this before. And you just want to be by yourself. It's like the people who are choking. They want to go off and die by themselves. Meanwhile, you have to come back so people can actually save you, right? So I think when we are in community and we're getting that reflected back, like that mirror, like you talked before, right? Then I'm like, oh, I hear your pain and I hear you expressing something. And I say, oh my God, me too, Jen. And then I feel so seen. I feel so loved. I feel so cared for, because I realize that my experience is not unique. It is one. It's a common experience, because we all are going through similar things. They may not be exactly alike, but we've all experienced not enoughness. We've all experienced feeling that loneliness, feeling like something's not available to us, right? We've all experienced those commonalities. They just kind of dressed up in different ways.
They are. And when you share, I feel seen. And that's really what most of us want anyway. We want to be seen.
Yeah, we do. And guess who really wants to be seen? Our little girls.
Your little girl. I knew you were going to say that.
But honestly, this is why I say she is the key. I think we've been kind of dabbling in this inner child thing, but I think this is the whole thing. Because if you think about it, if you just operate from that space of asking your little girl and saying, well, what would she want, or what would she need right now? She would want to be seen. She would want to be held and understood. And she would want someone to tell her it was okay. And she would want to like have a friend. Like, you know, those, like when you went to like camp or whatever, you know, you'd put her arm around a girlfriend and it would be like you two against the world. Or you like hold hands at the movies. I mean, we just had this awesome female sense of community, and we need that back. We need to be able to have that feeling, because it is so powerful.
It really is. It really is. And it does have to happen within community, because that's how we roll. We don't live in isolation. So you're 100% correct. And I do want to touch back again on just one other thing you said about resilience, because this is something that is near and dear to my heart, because we do wear the resilience badge proudly. And like I shared with you when I was on your podcast, I remember being in a therapy session and my therapist had said, you know, Jen, you're one of the most resilient people I know. And I just left that feeling so great. I was so mad. I was
Fuck you! Why was I was that to me?
I was so mad. Like, I don't want to be resilient anymore because resilience implies just surviving, and not dead is too low of a bar for me. I don't want to live there. I don't just want to be hovering over not dead. That's resilience. And so I hear you about the dark side of resilience. I think it's important that we redefine or embody a different space of thriving where the magic starts to happen. Because if we're just constantly resilient, we are in survival mode and nothing can be created or even joyful in a place of survival because we're in protection mode. And I don't want to live there. And I don't want other people to want to live there either.
No. And you know what? I think that's what's funny about this warrior women thing that I, because most people would be like, warrior women, your warrior women community, well, isn't that resilience? But I have redefined that warrior women, because to me, a warrior woman is in touch with her emotions and her heart. That's the difference. So like, I think some people have this like, you know, picture of a woman like in combat or the resilient woman when they think of a warrior woman. But I'm talking about somebody who is so in touch with their internal life that they've literally understand and can connect to their little girl just by closing their eyes even and just like drinking it in. And that's where I think if we can go in that direction, if we can head more towards the warrior women maybe than this like, or really that internal love of my warrior woman, my kid inside, my little girl inside versus this resilience thing, I think that that's the turn that I'm trying to get women to make, is that they don't have to hold it in and they don't have to be, because that badge is really fucking heavy. That resilience badge weighs about 100,000 pounds and it feels just as heavy, again, as a 50s housewife. Those women were fucking tired and exhausted and were on the edge of their sanity. We're back there again, Jen. We're back. And I think we just keep dressing it up and making it different and rebranding it and still putting women in this little box. And I am sick of it. I want women to feel and heal and feel good and actually be able to feel the joy and feel the sadness and feel the rage, because that is the full expression of ourselves. That's the full deal right there.
Yeah, we can't just cherry pick like you were sharing before. And redefining, I think, the word strength too, where strength is leaning into the emotion. Strength is letting out the rage. Strength is crying when you feel like you need to. I mean, my kids know. We were at a baseball game the other day and it was a great game. I don't normally like baseball, but this one happens to be a really good game. We went into like extra innings and things. And then there was fireworks afterwards and we were so close. And I love fireworks.
Me too. I love them.
And since my divorce, since COVID, I have not had the same emotional reaction to them. I've just been like, you know, whatever. I've been a little jaded. Well, the other night when we were sitting at this fireworks, I started tearing up. Like my body just, and I reconnected with that joy again. Oh, there it goes again. And I really feel that it is a testament to the work that I have done, where now the tears come and I just let them. And because of the healing, I have been able to reconnect with more joy. And the point of this is both of my kids saw me tearing up at these big booming things in the sky, like, Mom, you crying again? And yep, okay. And that's it. There was no like, what's wrong? There was no laugh at Mom. It was, you know, nothing, as if there was no issue with this. And what's really important about this and why I share this is because when you heal and change, you're changing the paradigm for the kids in your life, whether they are your own or whether they are your students. So when my kids then feel the need to release some liquid from their eyeballs, it is not a concern that something is wrong with them or wrong in general. It's just a release. And that's really where the generational change happens. So I'm so excited that you do the work that you do in this world. It is so necessary.
I love that story, Jen. First of all, I love fireworks too, but I love that because you're modeling for them that emotions are beautiful and it's okay. And you can spontaneously cry. And my kids do that too. Sometimes they'll make fun of it. Now they're getting so used to it. They're like, oh, here she goes again, but they're not saying it. They're just like, oh, Mom. Now they've started to be like, oh, Mom, are you crying? Like now it's become more gentle. It's funny. At first when it would happen, they would like make fun of me. And now I think they're realizing like that this actually is a strength. and they're starting to respect it more. So bravo that we are modeling this for our kids so they can have the freedom to just absolutely break down when they need to and get that beautiful release.
Yeah, it is beautiful. And that is strength for sure. So now that we're kind of on this topic of kids and this generational change, I need to ask the same question that I ask everybody on this podcast is, Liz, what is your dream for the future of education?
Here's my dream, Jen, that teachers are paid as much as LeBron James. That's my fucking dream, Jen. I want the teacher business to be the most well-paid, well-respected, like just this beautiful environment where people are like, they can't even wait to be teachers because they're so compensated for all the education that they have. And they are encouraged to go out and learn new things and go to other countries and bring things back. And like literally like just, I want teachers to be free. I want free teachers who are not bogged down by the limitations of these tiny fucking salaries and these small-minded ideals. I want teachers to be what they are, which is these incredible, expansive, beautiful, incredible guiders who are spending all of this time with our kids. Like, don't we want them to feel expansive and wonderful and bring all this goodness from all across any channels that they feel like they want to swim in? Like, that to me is a dream, a free teacher who's just free to explore and bring all this goodness back to my kid.
I just want to sit in that for a second.
Live right there.
Oh, that feels like honey to me and so beautiful. And, you know, here the tears are coming. I know you can't see them if you're listening, but they're there. I really believe, and this is why I ask this question, you know, when we share our dreams out loud, they are one step closer to becoming our reality. And we need to take care of the people who take care of the next generation. I wish your dream comes true, Liz.
This dream is coming true. I'm going to just tell you right now. I'm here for this.
Yes. Well, between the two of us, I think we're off to a good start.
Yeah. I mean, this is where it starts, right? Like when we, the work that we're doing, the work you're doing, especially supporting these teachers, letting them know that they should be supported, that that's something they deserve and that they have one of the most beautiful, important jobs. And that job is not going to go anywhere when you're a burnt out mess, right? And yes, the system is set up right now in a way that is actually making that worse, but that there are other tools, other ways, other conversations, other schools that are starting to get on board and realizing that when you have an expansive, happy, supported, beautiful teacher, you've got it all.
Yeah, you really do. Well, that is also my dream, and I am excited every day to make that a reality. So, Liz, thank you so much for your time, your talents. Can you just share a little bit about how people can learn more about you and see if, how they can work with you?
Yes. Well, you just can go to LizSwadek.com, which is my name, LizSwadek.com. You're going to find all the things. But I do have one really fun announcement, Jen.
Let's hear it.
One thing I'm going to give you is a free quiz because I love a quiz like nobody else. I really do. But I created this limiting beliefs quiz because people are always like, well, what's really holding me back? And I don't know. And all that stuff is in our subconscious and we really don't know. We think we know, but we don't. It's never what we think. So I have this amazing quiz that I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you a link. It's a free quiz. But I'm actually going to do a little camp this summer because I just figure all our little girls need to go to camp. You're the first to hear this, Jen.
Woo!
I am doing a warrior women camp. So I'm going to take your little girl to camp for 2 weeks and you're going to have the time of your life. So if your kid's going to camp or if your kids are in college or wherever your kids are, I'm going to let you go to camp this summer and we're going to have a real good time.
Oh, I love camp. Let's do it.
Yes. So I'll give you that link too.
Amazing. All of the links will be in the show notes for everyone's convenience. Thank you so much, Liz. It's always so fun to talk to you.
It's so fun talking to you. And I love the work you're doing. Keep going, Jen. Keep going, Jen. Keep going, Jen.
Yes, the little girl in me sees and honors the little girl in you with that one. I will, I will, I will, I will, I will. So if you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to the Take Notes podcast. Leave a great review, share with a friend, and we'll see you next time on Take Notes.
Incredible, right? Together, we can revolutionize the face of education. It's all possible, and it's all here for you right now. Let's keep the conversation going at Empowered Educator Faculty Room on Facebook.